We are here again with Nick Jellico. Podcast 1 was about the book. Podcast 2 will be a little bit different. So we're going to talk about some different things. I know you've done a lot around the book as well. So you've agreed to this podcast. You're launching the website next week. You've done also an animation map. Can you tell us more about this and why you're doing it?
Well, I think, you know, first and foremost is that the tendency with history today is to talk to the generations that's my generation. And I don't think that's really important. I think the real metric of success here is to talk to a completely new generation, a much, much younger generation, so that the history is passed on. You know, that being the case, the language that they understand, it's a digital language, it's a digital experience. And that not only applies to what's online, but it also applies to the museum experiences, which at the moment are dusty and old, mm-hmm. and frankly really rather boring. Who wants to see another battleship in a glass case? Not me, and not certainly not my kids. So I think this is to try and, where appropriate, take what you can into a digital, experiential, or multimedia environment so that you can pull from the photography or film, that's very little film, or oral histories, and use those to bring this history back to life.
Actually, let me ask you a more fundamental question. What are you trying to achieve with this?
I think the most important thing here is to engage a new audience. And for that, maybe we have to bend some of the academic rules, if you will. But once you've engaged that audience, then you've got to tell the story in a really understandable way. Mm-hmm. And then finally, your final challenge, but I don't necessarily think I'll get there, is to maybe interest some people from that new generation in actually studying history and studying more naval history.
Mm-hmm. You talked about wanting to tell the story because you felt your grandfather's version of events had never been well understood. Are there other reasons as well?
You know, I was intrigued. I mean, you probably know, I used to be a communications director. I used to work in communications. And I was also intrigued at the communications issues and potential around this. And what I thought was really fascinating was that if one told this story in the right way, and if one told the story in a multi-platform approach, where one was not only sort of writing a book, maybe, a book actually wasn't my intention right at the start, but if one used, you know, digital and interactive and social media and animation where it counted, maybe one could actually bring this story back to life and give it to the people and give it to educators in a way that really is useful. So if I look at the site, for example, one of the main purposes of the site is really to be a great resource for teachers.
What do you mean a resource for teachers?
They have some place that they can turn to and find presentations and find explanations and find materials. Interestingly, I'm going to be giving a speech at the Royal Hospital School, and they found one of their students was 14 and a half and was at Jutland. And that's quite extraordinary. 100 of their students died in the battle.
So what do you really think you can give teachers?
Maybe it's even a wider question, not only teachers and students, but also, you know, other people interested in history or even, you know, general population. I mean, the website is sort of designed on a number of levels. As I said, its primary purpose is as an educational tool. So it's a place where teachers can go. If they need materials, the materials will be there. I mean, the kind of materials will be ready to use presentations in the most, in the most sort of straightforward way. But also then there'll be some really kind of cool stuff for students. I mean, there'll be animations of the battle which actually show graphically how the battle actually developed. And the most difficult thing to do when you're reading about a battle is to look at a page which has a map that is a still map. It shows nothing. It's just a kind of snapshot in time. It doesn't show how it evolves, how it came about, or where it's going. So at least putting an animation in actually helps bring it alive. Some of the other things, though, are kind of interesting. So another thing that I mentioned was this idea of sharing history. History only really comes alive, maybe, if you can share history from your own experience or your own family. I mean, it's certainly interesting. It has certainly been interesting for me to look at European history through the eyes of what I've been reading about my family. You know, why my grandfather was serving in China when he was serving in China with Beatty, incidentally, or why he nearly went to the Sudan with Beatty, and why he was in Berlin in 1913, the year before the war started, which incidentally was the last moment on which the European crown heads met. And he was lucky enough to go to that. So it's given me that kind of perspective. But I think also for anybody else who's sort of trying to understand about their own family, if they find letters or artifacts, then this actually starts to bring an event, a historical event, which is very far removed normally. It starts to give it a little bit of kind of historical resonance. And, you know, I think kids today, you know, look at veterans and they think, my God, you know, this is a Neolithic age. But it's not. 100 years is just a small drop of sand in history. The other thought is that I'd love to use some sort of obvious technologies or tools like Google Maps. It's a great way of being able to throw a pin and say, okay, in this little village, there's something that actually will tell you something about Jutland. It might be a plaque, it might be a ship's bell, it might be some letters that are in a local library, might be any of these things. It might be some grave sites. I mean, in Scandinavia, there are 200 or 300 grave sites from sailors who drifted ashore up in north of Skagen in Denmark, or even drifted up to the Norwegian coast, which is, you know, most Brits don't know that. The other thing I'd love to do here, though, is for people to be able to share what events are happening locally. When we go into May 2016 or June 2016, because there'll be a lot of things going on. We know that on the 31st of May, there'll be a commemoration service in Scarpa at Kirkwall Cathedral. There'll be ships that are going from Scarpa Flow to meet with the German Navy on the North Sea. There'll be some ships going out from Rosyth in further south. I've been invited to Labo in Germany to take part with the Commonwealth Graves Commission of a joint ceremony commemorating Jutland there. So there's going to be a lot of things happening in this period. We've also got a lot of museum exhibitions going on. The National Maritime Museum in Greenwich will have one. The Royal Navy in Portsmouth and Belfast and at the Explosion Museum will have exhibitions. And we're putting together an exhibition in Wilhelmshaven in North Germany. And actually, as we speak, in a couple of weeks from away from where we're speaking now, the first exhibition is actually starting in Denmark. And what's interesting about Tiburon, villagers from Tiburon were able to walk across the beach and listen to the sound of the guns rolling across. And they probably were the only people on land who actually heard this battle going on.
I understand you're trying some new approaches in the book, linking to the sites, for example.
Well, in the book, as I mentioned before, you know, normally a reader would have, say, you know, a gallery of photographs and then maybe a dozen maps to explain the battle at different points of the battle. I don't know about you, but personally, I've even found that, you know, I can be in the middle of a chapter on a battle and look at a map and I still don't have really any idea of where I am sitting in the battle or what's kind of happening. So my original thought was to actually have a very detailed animated battle map, or rather chapters of the battle in animation that a reader could reference or look to when they were in that particular chapter or phase of the battle. And my original idea was to actually put a QR code, you know, that you could point your telephone at, and then that would take you directly to the URL. But I think, you know, whatever suits. So one of the things that I'll do in the beginning of the book is actually give the site's address and give an explanation of what the site has. So apart from the animations, the site also has quite a lot of historical research materials that just goes much, much deeper than the book itself.
Hasn't everything that could have been said about Jutland already been said?
I found that there was an enormous amount of material that was kind of lying hidden. And there's two aspects to this. I mean, one is that I feel that there's still a lot of what I call shoebox history. And that is that all these old family letters and from some great-grandfather who was fighting in the battle that had been sitting in the attic. I'd love those to see the light of day again. And maybe, you know, if I can help by giving a place where those sorts of materials can be curated for the future, that will please me. And I think the other thing is that, you know, for the academics, I spent a huge amount of time searching for stuff in America that was actually sitting in, you know, in England and in libraries in England. I didn't realize that a lot of my grandfather's letters were in the Churchill archives in Cambridge. And when I went there, they were incredibly kind and really helpful to me. And you know, as they were in sort of say Leeds. Leeds has the most extraordinary collection of oral histories from the First World War. And I was not aware of that until this year. We also discovered some really interesting maps at our own house, at the family house. And my brother, Johnny, came to me one day and said, well, you know, we all thought they were a kind of roll of wallpaper. It turned out that they probably were some pretty unique maps of the battle. So I've been able to, we've scanned those. And all those kind of maps will be available on the sites.
It sounds like it's not all been hard work. There's also been some fun projects.
You know, there's also, I mean, there's sort of very, there's some fun things that are happening out of this as well. We're going to have a wonderfully limited edition of a great Scotch whiskey. My grandfather was as you probably know, he was the first Earl of Scarpa. My grandfather took the title Earl Jellicoe of Scarpa really in respect to the men with whom he'd served at Scarpa. And one of the lovely stories was that the distillery at Scarpa was actually in danger of burning down, and sailors from the fleet who clearly had a vested interest got ashore very quickly indeed to put the fire out. I went and had a look at the distillery with my wife and my stepmom Philippa about 5 years ago, and it was lovely, and they took us around the distillery and gave us a sort of, you know, great personal tour. And then I had started a conversation with them that has in the last month actually come to fruition. And this was a conversation that has gone on for the last 3 years. And so we're going to do a special edition, a special memorial edition of Scarpa, commemorating the event. And that will be something which will be really lovely. I mean, apart from anything else, I love the whiskey. And a great, lovely joke from one of my friends at Le Beau, Dr. Jan Witt, who is the historian at Le Beau Memorial. When he and I were drinking it, he suddenly said, yeah, this is delicious, but it's something strange. It has a slight taste of German steel, which is given that the German fleet was scuttled at Scarpa. This is a lovely joke. It has fascinated me, and I think it's an area where you find you constantly learn, but you're also meeting a really interesting range of people through it. Also now I've met an enormous amount of Germans, Wilhelmshaven Marine Museum or the Le Beau Marine Memorial up above Kiel, or writers in Berlin or Hamburg. My friends in Munich have been helping me. The animation is done in Munich. So this project has just opened up an incredibly wide, rich field of knowledge and friendship, frankly. There's some lovely things that have come out of this. I've sort of mentioned, I mean, one of the nicest friendships I made, and it was all too short, was with a lovely man called Ron Horobin. And Ron Ron was a bricklayer, made his own house. And I saw, he was also a passionate model maker. And he'd made a beautiful model of the Iron Duke, my grandfather's flagship. And I saw it by chance on the web, and I called Ron up and I said, gosh, you know, would you mind if I came and saw what you've made? Because I'm, you know, it looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so he said, no, do come. And I did. I was astonished. Ron unfortunately died of cancer, a very, very painful death. And he and his wife and I still have remained very close friends. But he was a very generous man. He just gave me the model, which had spent 3 years building, and said, it's yours. It should be with the family. So that will take pride of place in many of the exhibitions. You also know, I mean, I worked for the last 12 years or so with Rolex, and there's a lovely expression at Rolex, and I was running communications there for a while, but every Rolex does tell a story. And when you look at a Rolex, you kind of think, well, that's the day that I bought it, and this is what it means to me. And the Rolex that I will get will be dedicated to Jutland, and I will engrave on the back probably something like, you know, 1916, 2016, Skagerrakschlacht, Jutland. Mm-hmm. And that will be my reminder.
Are there other materials on the site which are unique, or materials that help people understand this battle better?
Very interestingly, we have, there's probably about 6 or 7 huge leather-bound volumes of my grandfather's press clippings from about 1910 through to about 1920. I mean, it's a quite extraordinary resource for any historian who wants to look at the local newspapers and how they talked about the battle and how they talked about the Admiralty or his role. And to be honest, they were just sitting in a cupboard at our home. And I would prefer that they're available to other people and looked after. And the maps, there are some extraordinary maps that have been made of the battle. I mean, probably the most beautiful maps and the most detailed maps in one sense are the German official maps, which, if I'm not mistaken, I think came out in about 1926, written by a guy called Gruss. Gruss was a navigating officer at Jutland, so he had a very, very first-hand experience of the battle. But his maps they show not only the track of the ships, they also show what the weather conditions were, and if there were fog banks reported in a certain area, he's tried to sort of point those out.
So how do you hope people will use your site?
What we're doing is really creating a resource that other people then can start to take over and feel that they have some ownership within, that they can change and contribute to and can see change from what they do. As I say, it's something that I find, you know, personally very, very engaging for me. It's been a very emotional journey, very personal journey for me. But I hope that this will be a valuable journey. I hope that I can bring value to other people. And I hope that the history that I've written has been a contribution, and a fair contribution to kind of an evolving picture of this battle and an evolving picture of how people interpret this part of the war. I mean, I certainly learned a huge amount about my grandfather and how he behaved and how he was treated, more to the point, in 1917. I did not know this side of the story at all, and that's been a wonderful sort of illuminating journey. And I read somebody's university thesis on that from, I think it was from the University of St. Andrews, Alan McFarlane. And he wrote a whole paper on my grandfather's dismissal, which I found completely fascinating.
Nick, I'd like to thank you for the time you've spent with Guillaume and me.
Oh, thank you.
You haven't heard much from Guillaume, as he's the sound engineer. but we wouldn't have anything without him. But both of us would like to thank you and to wish you the best of luck, both with the book, the site, and all the other great projects. Feels like it's now about the right time to have, what'd you say in Scotland? A wee dram of scapa.